What's going on, everybody? Mark here, editor and sometimes contributor to the Truth Response. Hey, just giving you guys a heads up that some of today's content is of an adult nature, so you might want to be mindful of where your kiddos are. Listener discretion is advised.
The Truth Response.
Yeah, I'm here. My name's Derek. I am.
He's the only one trying to make this thing happen. Get this thing off the ground.
I'm Lizzie, I am not trying to make it happen.
Get this cheese wagon rolling.
I'm Trey.
I'm Nick, and I'm trying to remove the sharp objects from Lizzie's reach.
She can do damage with that straw, I promise.
I've seen her cut herself with a plastic fork.
And you guys are probably thinking, knife. Oh, I wish I had video and not just audio.
That'll come at some point. Yeah. You probably don't want to see what we're sitting in right now, though.
My brother did make the mistake of telling me I hadn't hurt him with a straw, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to stab you with it. And he said, okay. And my mom was like, okay. He said it was okay. So I took the straw, held it towards the bottom of it, and then went, took full swing and stabbed it in the back of his hand, and he bled. And
then
he's
you
like,
drank
Mom.
His blood.
He's like, Mom, she hurt me. And she's like, you said she could do it. It's on you.
Did you guys ever see the movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I did.
No.
Oh, you should see it. It's so good.
And Those words are not to be put together. That movie was not great.
They wrap them it in. Was... They capture the humans and then they wrap them up in cotton candy and then they stick the silly straws in them and they drink their blood.
It was dumb. It
is a B movie the whole way through, but it's like
it
complete
was not,
cult classic.
But it wasn't as bad as.
I don't plan on joining
Mars Attacks. Mars Attacks was way worse.
Way worse how? Like, way worse is
in
way
every,
better?
In every way. No. Like, it was a trash movie.
I think this
it's
is
hilarious.
Great, I think this
Mars
is
Attacks?
Yes.
The one where the music makes their heads explode.
Yes, hilarious.
No, that was stupid.
This is hilarious.
No, it was horrid.
This is a great lead-in to how the...
Look at all of the huge names that were in that movie, too. So many. I can't even name them all. It was hilarious.
Yeah, there were a lot of big names, and they probably all wish that they weren't in that movie.
It was intentionally made that way.
That's sad. That's
it was supposed
that explains
to,
a lot about
it
our
was supposed to
today.
Feel like that B movie today, dude. That was released 20 years ago.
I know, and those are the people running the world today. It's the people that enjoyed that movie. So
what are you saying?
You know what I'm saying.
Well, was it this year is 25 years Titanic, right?
Oh, is that for real?
I'm pretty
so,
sure.
Okay.
Oh,
you bring up
makes
Titanic.
Me feel old.
You bring up Titanic. I watched an interview the other day, and the old question of could both of them have fit on the door, the answer actually is yes, they could have. However, they probably neither one would have survived based on the way that like the water.
The buoyancy.
All the buoyancy and all that stuff. They would have probably froze to death. So there's the answer.
Boom, eat that. So when I was looking at houses for the leadership retreat, one of them was a Titanic room, and it had Jack and what's the girl's name? I don't even know. It doesn't matter, right?
Rose?
Yes. Yeah, it had right. Jack and Rose, like it was their picture. Like that was the whole wall was their picture
on
front of the boat. I was going to put you guys in that room.
Yeah. Wow.
Listen, okay. That house is on my save list, just so you know.
Nice.
Last year it was like we were going to get a Star Wars room, but that didn't happen.
I got the
double bunk.
I got the Harry
we
Potter
ended
room.
Up with the Disney princess room.
We did.
It was actually kind of cool, though. It was kind of creepy, though. Like that dim glow, you got like all these Disney princesses staring at you. Not okay. It was weird. And the... What were they? They were like maybe twin beds. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like tiny beds. I'm a big dude.
Tiny
for those of you who don't know that are listening. And a twin bed is not enough room for me. I mean, I'm not that big, but it just is not as comfortable as
it's definitely
bed.
Long enough for him.
Yeah. I am short and fat, so it was definitely long enough. Anyway, so today's topic of conversation is going to start
with movies.
With movies, no. Although, we're at episode 4 of The Chosen.
Yeah.
I think the first season.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Finally made it there. You've got so much more to go.
You know what's dumb? And I'm going to tell myself, my wife's in the room, and she probably doesn't know this yet, but I have literally teared up in every episode. Mm. Like, just the feeling, it's just overwhelming because it's like...
It is.
It takes all of the stuff I grew up learning and being taught, and it just makes it feel just that little bit more tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And they did such a good job with it, but, like, I don't know. I get emotional every time, and I stare at the screen so that nobody else can see my eyes, you know, like... Because I'm, like, trying not to tear up, and then my daughter will ask me something about it, and I'll be like, uh-huh. And then, you know, not make any kind of...
At one point, she was like, is that Jesus? He's like, I don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't know if it's Jesus or not.
There's an episode where it's, like, All the Little Children is what it's called, or something like that. And
the one where Jesus makes fart noises?
Yeah.
That's a great episode.
No, it's good. Yeah. Although,
he's like,
for parts of it, it felt a little on the creepy side. Just because anybody... that's not aware of the context of what's going on. Like, there's a bunch of little kids, and he's playing with all these little kids randomly or whatever. But it was super innocent. It was a really good episode. But I didn't know at the beginning whether or not it was Jesus or maybe John the Baptist, like in the wilderness and doing that.
Oh yeah,
that
you haven't seen John the Baptist yet. Wait till you see him.
Okay.
Yeah, he's cool. Definitely different.
Definitely different. Yeah, got it.
That guy's definitely John the Baptist.
And we had, at that point, seen Jesus like a total of twice or two or three times is all.
Some of my favorite scenes are with John, though. Mm-hmm. Like there's, you know, and as I don't want to ruin anything.
I've read the Bible.
No, but there are things that have been adapted to the show that just aren't there, right? That are still enjoyable when you see the reactions of the other people around Jesus when he performs the miracles that he performs. And so, like, John is one of those guys that, you know, he doesn't hold back. Mm-hmm. You get to see kind of
the part that I was like, I don't know about that, was there was a part where he and Jesus were arguing.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to do something, and Jesus is like, no, that's not how you wanted to go in front of Herod's court or whatever, which he ultimately ended up doing. And he's like, I don't think that's a great idea. And he's like, it's a great idea. And he's like, I don't think that's a great idea. So, and he just argued the whole way.
That'll be fun.
And
that'll
John's really like, I'm see. No. Yeah. He's like, no, cousin. Like, I'm going to make, I'm going, I'm, you know, he's going to answer to, you know, I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to call him out. And he's like,
Mary Magdalene, John. So far, because we haven't gotten very far into it, but Mary Magdalene's part in it is neat.
Yeah.
It's concepts I have never thought about before.
Yeah.
You know, like just that completely radically changed human that now is doing what she can remember to do as, you know, a Jewish woman or whatever. Like, and it's really cool to think about a lot of those things. A lot of people have had an issue with, like, Matthew, right? And Matthew being, like, probably autistic or whatever, you know? And why? It's like, well, because, I don't know, because people are dumb. And so, I mean, seriously.
I think it's
cool.
So good. Yeah, I think it's
great.
It's a really cool dynamic for, like,
I mean,
he could be that way.
I haven't seen, like, Jesus hasn't, like...
Wasn't? Right. Like, you know, we don't have anything to base that off of. Right. So, like, and Matthew's not the basis of Scripture. That's the thing. It's Jesus. So it's like, but these are exactly the kind of people that Jesus calls, right, is the outcast from society. And why was Matthew? Matthew always thought differently, right? And that's exactly
honestly,
that autistic.
If you had Matthew here right now, he'd probably be like,
you're all stupid.
It's just, well, I mean, even if he wasn't, he'd probably be like, well, you know, they're speaking to today's people. Like, it's showing people that, you know, we were all just people like you guys, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and that's the part that I love the most about it is it started out showing everybody's flaws, right? Like,
it makes them real.
And it makes them so real. Like, it's cool.
And relatable, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's your...
You're in for so much good stuff in season two as well, because I had one of those, like...
How many episodes are in each season?
Eight.
Eight.
Yeah,
I think it's eight.
So,
well, I may just watch the last episode. I don't want to wait anymore.
Of season two was the one that got me irrationally emotional when Jesus is preparing for
the emotionally constipated.
I know
one?
It was stupid. Jesus was preparing for the Sermon on the Mount, and there was like this weird moment where you see him like rehearsing what he's going to say, and I was like, Jesus wouldn't do that. And then I was like, would he? Like, would he actually have to rehearse what he was going, like, would he be going over this
you're
sermon
give your best to God.
In his mind and like present? And I was like, wow, like that was a really cool place where I was like, I kind of enter into that space with Jesus every week, which is really cool. And then, but that wasn't the real moment. The moment came when he goes over and he's trying to figure out how to start the Sermon on the Mount. And he comes to this place of reciting the Beatitudes. And as he's going through it, it flashes to each one of his disciples and how they attribute some of this aspect of blessed are. And dude, it was one of those like, wow, like he sees all their flaws and then he sees all of this good stuff that he's working in them. Mm-hmm. And just imagining him thinking of or potentially thinking of the disciples when he was, because part of the theme of the two last episodes are him coming up with like, how do I start this thing? Like, I've got really good stuff, but I can't figure out how to start this thing. And then all of a sudden, he's standing there on the top of the hill, overlooking the camp, watching everybody mingling with each other and going about their tasks. And he just, like, it just comes to him. I was like, oh, my gosh, that was cool. Is it right? I don't know. But it was cool.
I think it lends something to the idea that, like, A, his humanity is part of it, mm-hmm. that he was guided by the Holy Spirit, and he did nothing that and said nothing that God himself didn't tell, you know, the Father right. didn't tell him, right? Right? Like, I think that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it almost would be bringing that humanization to a point of, I mean, for pastors, like, that's awesome.
I wanted to, you had said something about Jesus preparing, and so it's as I was in starting school and I was starting my faith walk and learning and trying to understand like some of these things, like that's a scene that I've come to see a couple times now too, and mm-hmm. and one of the things that I got from it is having to go, you know, and be like, well, if I think he would prepare in that way. Mm-hmm. I think it would. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Of course he prepared. Sure. Like, he didn't just walk up and just, you know, God doesn't work that way. God mm-hmm. prepares and, mm-hmm. and puts in the work and tends to things. Now, he can do big miraculous, but in mm-hmm. this case, I don't think mm-hmm. this was as a, like, watch me deliver this beautiful sermon mm-hmm. off the cuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I think... And for me, that was very much if he's spending that kind of time, mm-hmm. how much more time should we be spending? Because we're not perfect,
yeah.
you know, because yeah. we're not him.
Well, and like Derek said, we're only a couple episodes in, but he was, you know, he prays before he goes to sleep every night mm-hmm. and he prays for the meals and stuff. And he does like Serenity was a little bit confused. And she's like, is he praying to himself? She asked me later. And I was like, well...
He's praying to the Father.
Yeah, and right. that's what we right. that's what right. I said to her. But like, she's still trying to figure that out yet because she's six. So, but
yeah, she's like, still trying. Jesus is God. Well, yes, you're right. But we're talking about God the Father. What? Which is Jesus? Well, no, Jesus is God the Son. And then it's a very circular.
It's the Trinity is a difficult thing for to understand and. It because we don't.
I think it's impossible.
Mm. Yeah.
To truly understand.
Yeah. I believe that it is an impossible concept for us to really. We can get it, but we can't.
Or like, it's as simple as well, it's simpler than we think. It could be that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it could be as simple as well. It's God is a being, and there's three parts to that being, like. Just it could be just that simple, but and it doesn't make sense because, you know, obviously right. we have never visualized or right. whatever.
We don't necessarily that. Have a tangible illustration of what that looks like, because all of the illustrations that are used to describe
we God say they're in, not in
the
good,
many facets,
right?
They're okay, but they're just not complete.
But at the same time, like, what if they are? You know, like, what if God is like water, right? And there's this amount of God. Well, there's this amount of God, right? Like, that is what makes up God. That's what constitutes what God is, mm-hmm. you know? And ice, you know.
And vapor.
Vapor and the liquid.
Solid liquid gas. Yeah.
And he's just, there are those amounts that are broken up into those three things. You know, it could be as simple as that. That's what I mean by it. Like,
I think the challenging part with that, which is usually the argument, is that there's also a hierarchy, or at least a perceived hierarchy, that Father is over Son, Son is over Spirit.
Right, and but there's also a hierarchy in water, right? Like,
is there?
Because the vapor,
I'm pretty
the vapor
sure,
is here.
I'm pretty sure your gas water wants to fight with you right now.
Well, no, because the gas wants to go up, right? Like, that's the thing with it. The gas is going to want to rise. The ice floats on top of the liquid. Like, there is a hierarchy.
Okay.
Next argument. Bring it on.
In Derek's mind, there's a hierarchy of water. I am not completely there.
I'm not saying that one is better than the other, yeah. right? Because... I'm not necessarily sure that's how it is.
Like, we always look at this one is more important than this one, and this one's more important than this one, and this one's more important than this one in a hierarchy, but that's not true
right.
of God, the Trinity, either.
Right.
I think it's more just about their...
So you're saying it's getting closer to my illustration with water and ice. Right. Because it's not there's not an more importance to one of them. It's just they literally flow from top to bottom. Like, there's... vapor to ice to then liquid.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
We'll just hold on to that.
Look, icebergs float on top of the liquid.
And right? now we're back at the Titanic. Da,
da, full circle.
Da, da, amazing. Da, da. So today on the Truth Response, we really just unpacked this concept of the chosen, and we really wanted to look at water, vapor, solid, and just wanted to give that to you today and trust in God. So, hey, we'll talk to you next week. If you have any questions,
I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah, none of us do. I think we lost a little bit of time on our... Nope. He just ended it quick. all right. Take us somewhere else, Trey. You sent a video.
I sent this video out today, and it was talking about the... really what it was discussing is the changes in the American church and how the what the shift has been, because there's this narrative that the American church in general is dying. And I think that the video was done by they were covering another video, but it was Ruslan.
Video about a video playing another video.
Yeah.
He's a solid dude. Like, his reviews of things are really
He seems
good.
To keep it pretty solid. So, like, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't know the guy personally, but he seems to do pretty solid work, and he seems to love the Lord. So, those are all good things. But the what he was reviewing, the guy was showing the numbers, and this all even went out to 2016. I would say that my guess would be if we took the last 7 years now, that the decreases in numbers are probably even worse.
And I think that's what he said.
The shift is even greater, yeah.
I think that's what he said, too, because this is...
Especially 2020. I'd say 2020 is one of those huge turning points in the lifeblood of the church and attendance. And you saw, I think, an even harsher acceleration, because he did mention the progressive side of things, too. I think there's been an even more rapid... increase in that too, which will ultimately bring about an even harder collapse of it.
Yeah, and I think so. What the video basically showed is that as these traditional denominational churches. So we'll take like the Methodists, the Pentecostals, the
Baptist,
mainline.
Yeah. Mainline churches.
Mainline, big name.
Church of Christ.
Churches, right?
It was DOC. It was Church Christ, Disciples of Christ.
As they started to introduce.
Okay.
And this has come up recently, actually, in the news with people. I don't know if you guys have heard about the stuff with Andy Stanley and some of his comments, and then some of the more comments that have come out from other pastors who've been at conferences and heard him say things, and with, you know, others backing them up on hearing these same comments, that there's a real problem with the affirmation of homosexuality and transgenderism within the American church. And, you know, that's an abomination. And so when we set those things up, it taints the goodness and the glory of God, because now you're affirming things that are outside of God.
Right.
And so you can't, and people recognize that and they can tell. And so when the people that want the truth are going to leave.
Right.
And then the people who don't care about the truth aren't going to show up anyway.
Yep.
And so your church is going to die.
Yep.
Because there's nothing healthy in it.
Or there's one of the points that I was like, that makes a lot of sense, is like, if you don't look different from everything else that's around you, what's the point in going?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's just a social club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's, and I know this is the reason these churches are doing it. They're dying and they see it.
Right.
And they're not able to connect with the culture anymore.
Right.
And but here's the difference, right? You can take a church like the Methodist Church and Rise, and you can compare them, and you can say, well, they're going and they're accepting things outside of God in the culture. And then we take Rise, and Rise is willing to change to fit the culture to a point until it starts contradicting biblical truth, right?
This is that whole discussion about
method
and message, right?
Right.
So the methods have to change. The message cannot.
Amen.
Right. And it's not does not. It cannot.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that's that immutable truth that comes from Scripture, that we're still talking about the same things that were brought into effect 2,000 years ago.
That's right.
In the same manner.
Or even further back, like
sure.
Look at Abraham, right? Yep. Like, it's all the same.
Yep.
Like, there's nothing new under the sun, right?
Right.
That's including the teachings, right?
Yep.
Like, it was all foreshadowing. It was all, you know, trust in the Lord. You know, like these things are bad. Like the whole Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean,
sure.
The thing that has changed is that Jesus entered, right? And now I feel like God doesn't come and just destroy whole nations as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I feel like that is really the difference, you know.
No,
there's not fire raining from the sky anymore.
He lets the leaders,
you know,
do it to their own people.
Right. No, but that's true too, right? But like, we're not seeing like these crazy miraculous things destroying whole nations anymore. And really hasn't really been a thing since Jesus, you know. That was a major shift. But it was still the same stuff, right? Like, it was still the same stuff being taught. It was still the same things that you were supposed to respond with. It was all about just doing things for God, loving Him first, and then loving all of the people around you. Like, that's what Abraham was supposed to be doing, and that's what people 200, 300 years from now, if there are people 200, 300 years from now, are supposed to be doing then. Like, that's the whole story of humanity and God. So,
The principles are very, very much the same, though. We've been going through the book of Joshua,
right,
and you still find that God enacted very specific things. Last week was a hard text to talk about, because it was the destruction of Jericho. But as much as you might look at it and think this is a judgment text, it's also a text of grace, where God allowed for opportunity after, I mean, He allowed for 7 days of them marching around the city for people to be like, oh man, they're coming. Like, it's here. And beyond that, there was plenty more time. You saw Rahab the prostitute who who gave her life over to God and said, you know, yeah, I'm gonna put myself on his side.
And they drew her out of the city and right. they set her up in their own camp and, yeah.
and
took
not,
care of her.
And not only that, it was her whole family That's too, right. which is a really
who didn't
really
necessarily
cool thing.
Believe.
Yeah.
You know, they were spared because of her belief. Faith.
Right.
Yeah. Not, you know, her faith was strong enough.
Right.
To mm-hmm. because God had given, well, I mean, it came from God, right? Like yep. all that faith. But yep. it's amazing that story. It's really been a help for me this week, you know, just that, especially talking about, you know, marching, you know, I feel like I'm marching around some city walls
sure.
Right now. Yep. Like, and that I'm waiting for God to do his work. And I know that he's gone before me already, because, you know, when you see his hand on things, and then the surprises come, you know, maybe it's not Satan surprising you, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's him right. just doing his work yep. for his will. So,
if you haven't listened to it already, you can go back and listen to the podcast that we have of the sermon and Rise on Sunday. Sunday. And yeah, it was very, neat for even for like, there were some things in it that I had never really thought about before, as well. And I mean, I know the story really well, you know, and like the concept of the whole, you know, day one, okay, God's got this thing. Oh, okay. We got to wait a little longer in day two and then yeah. day three. And by day four, a lot of us are like, oh, really?
You're Where gonna, are you?
Doing?
You're going to make me
what
wait
doing?
Till day seven, really?
And then by day six, you're like, okay, this.
Now we just look stupid.
Yeah.
You're either at that I look stupid phase or you're like, I'm going to die on this hill. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And your resolve just strengthens. But then the crazy thing is the seventh day, mm-hmm. right? Like, that was the day they ain't supposed to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not supposed to do anything. Mm-hmm. And yet, that was the day that they had to do the most. Now, I don't know if it was actually on the Sabbath that they, you know, the seventh day was or whatever. But,
no, but
a lot of things,
point.
A lot of things, you know, in scriptural text is very much there's numbers for a reason, right? Not everything, but a lot of things. But like, imagine even if the Sabbath was the first day, they're doing things that to an extent of like more than what.
It's what a lot of scholars believe is
a
that
lot of people think
this was happening during the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. This was wrapping it up. And then, this started on day one was the Sabbath. And then day seven was the Sabbath. And they believe it. It just reveals more of God's nature.
But if, I mean, like, if we're talking about this today, right? Like, how did like the Pharisees and stuff, like, how did they miss that?
It's great.
I mean,
where was that
at, you know?
Back to The Chosen for 1 minute, right? One of the episodes you're going to find in season two as well is where Jesus walks into the temple and he heals the man with shriveled hand, yep. and he does it right there in the synagogue, and then they're out and they're picking heads of wheat,
right?
And
right,
the Pharisees come out and they're like, "How dare you do this?" And Jesus says, "Well, David ate the bread that was meant for the altar, and God allowed that." He's like, think about all of this. Like, is it unlawful for me to heal? Is it unlawful for me to do good on a day when you've made it an idol instead of an actual day of right. rest?
The Sabbath had become a burden to them instead of being a blessing like it was supposed to be,
sure.
right? And that's I remember dealing with this question early in the faith, someone that had asked me, like, I said, you know, we should keep the Sabbath. You should keep the Sabbath. It's what you should do. Mm-hmm. Their response was, well, what do you mean by that? Like, what's the line? And my basic line was, well, what are you doing on the Sabbath and what are you doing it for? Mm-hmm. Right? If you're out there working so that you can make some money, like, because you don't have enough, then to me, that that's not necessarily trusting, you know, that's not trusting God to me, you know, personally.
Here's another,
you know,
here's
that's my conviction.
Here's a question to that old you, right, that are talking, or even the now you feelings. Like, what day has to be the Sabbath?
Right.
That doesn't, I don't put a day on it because I don't know.
That's an important thing, right? Because, like, realistically speaking, like, if we want to get super, you know, literal, we should be celebrating on the Saturday because that was the original Sabbath, right?
Sure.
And then now it within, you know, Christian circles, it shifted to Sunday, right?
Well,
at some point.
I think the misinterpretation there is not the Sabbath. The Sabbath never changed, just our day of observing, our day of worship changed.
Yeah.
Right.
The
Sabbath, what I'm saying is,
the Sabbath is was never said to be on a Saturday or a Sunday or a Monday or a Tuesday.
But that's not how it's been viewed throughout all of history.
Yeah, but that's not like, but, that's how it's viewed throughout history is also not necessarily biblical.
What I'm saying is in the Bible, that's not how it's viewed. Now, that's probably, I agree with you guys.
I'm pretty sure it says work 6 days and take a seventh as a rest. Right. And so if you work 6 days.
Nobody within the Bible, is what I'm saying, viewed it as just that, really.
Yeah, but they're all men and they're wrong. That's what Jesus came and told them about.
I get it.
But
I get it.
The Sabbath is for man, not for God. So he doesn't need you to take a Sabbath. He doesn't need you to do anything, right? God didn't need a Sabbath. He took one to set the example for us, right? So when we take the Sabbath, it's a specific observance to show that we don't have to work every single day, that we don't have to kill ourselves at work and make work the idol, that we can take a day off for our family and for God.
We should rest to work, not work to rest.
Mm. Yeah.
Listening to a pretty good message came from Life Church. He's talking about the rhythms, how it talks about in Genesis that there was evening and there was morning on each day. And he used it as an illustration of God created us to enter into each day rested so we can work, not work so we can rest. So work is a vital part of purpose that we've been given. He gave the man and the woman work, and that's meant to reveal God's nature in us and to reveal the gifts that he's given to us. And so, but our rhythms are all whack. We work so then
living
we can
for the weekend.
Right, that's it. Right, we work so we can rest. We work so we can take vacations. We work so we can get to retirement. We work so we can we can do whatever we want to whenever. Like we can take those 2 weeks. But the concept in Scripture, the upside down kingdom that we're revealed is, we need to take that time of rest so we can be most effective at the work that we do. Wow. Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it that way.
I never did until I heard that either, and I was like, that's phenomenal. I love that. So,
well, because that changes my whole perspective on the whole. Like, I was out of, those who don't know, I was out of work for a whole year. And so, like, you know, wrapping your head around, why did I need to take that year Sabbath, basically?
It's the year of Jubilee for you.
You know, it actually is a Jubilee
year. So you don't get
year.
That for how many years?
Now that you mention it.
Right.
It was a 49 Jubilee
more.
Year.
49 so, more years until you get that again?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, God's working on that Jubilee and, in a Jubilee year, all debts are wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? I'm hoping
that
that's coming.
Didn't quite happen for you this past
Not
year.
Not yet.
But
no, but we're working on it. You know, we'll see how things go the rest of this this year. But, I think it's been good.
So I want to go kind of shift us back in the direction of where we started this thing, kind of talking about some of the mainline churches. So this week, we're going to be talking about Achan. So what we're going to find...
Achan?
He might be.
Achan Bones.
So what we're gonna find out is that there was this...
For some bacon.
There was this Israelite who, during the storming of Jericho, found some really pretty things and then took them home for his own satisfaction.
Oh.
And...
I'm sure nothing bad befell him.
Exactly. Well, no, wasn't him. It was the entire nation.
Oh.
Right? Because then they set their sights on the next city that they're supposed to take,
suckers.
Which is smaller and far less fortified than Jericho.
They're like,
we got
this.
Yeah, we got this. Send a couple thousand guys up there.
Did the Did the nation of Israel know he did these things?
No.
Not initially.
But when
then they drew lots, right?
Right.
They drew lots to figure out who it was and what tribe and what down to the family. Like, they drew lots until they got to his family, and then he was like, oh, yeah, it's buried underneath my tent.
Yeah.
Okay, so they... But
so the
they end up figuring it out, but yeah. Not after there's already some issue, right? They go, okay. They send a few thousand guys got to go it. Capture the city of Ai. Ai is not well fortified. Ai puts them tails. On their heels.
And it wasn't the leader. It was just some guy.
Just some guy.
Wow.
Right. Just some.
But he brought enough sin into the nation of Israel for right. all of that judgment?
For the whole nation. Wow. So 36 Israelites fell by the sword as they were fleeing from this seemingly inferior military right. that they were facing after they just won this incredible victory, and it all came because this one guy, he had enough and he wanted more. And then he took out of his own selfishness instead of out of what God commanded. God mm-hmm. said, you are to devote everything in this city, and it's either to be destroyed or that's put right. into the treasury of the Lord. That's so right. it's either to be used for worship or it is to be completely...
Yeah.
Abolished, like destroyed. So one of those two things needs to happen. And he's like, well, I really like that robe over there, so I'm going to take that home. And by the way, I don't think the Lord's treasury is going to miss a little bit of gold and a little bit of silver until God's like, I am accounting here. I'm doing my accounting. And we've come up a little bit short. And the curse, essentially the curse is, he says, you've stolen from the Lord. And you've lied to him. Mm. That's hard, right? Like yeah. that is the voice of God saying he has been stolen from and lied to. And God has done this profound work in them, through them. So transitioning this back, we think about some of the mainline denominations that exist and how for years... We could probably say millennia. That's been the place you go, right? You are a part of the Methodist Church. You are a part of the Lutheran Church. You are a part of the Presbyterian Church. You are a part of these mainline, big mainline denominations. And it makes you wonder if they have gotten to a place where they forgot God's victory. And they started to run after things in their own way. Their treasuries are full. And so they can just hit cruise control, right? And autopilot and let this thing happen.
Well, I think their treasuries were full.
They were, correct.
And I think what happened was the treasury started running out and they panic.
Yep.
And they're like, their concern is now, why don't people want to come to church? Oh,
how
well,
do I catch up, basically?
They say it's because we hate gay people. So that means if I don't want to do that, then I have to affirm
right.
what they think I hate.
Right.
And this is the problem. This is where they miss. And for us as Christians, I think we need to be able to defend our position as Christians. And so we don't hate gay people.
Right.
We hate sin.
Right.
And so then the reality is it doesn't matter if you're gay or not, because you've probably lied, you've probably stolen, you've right. probably hated, you've probably lusted, just like every other human being on the planet. So you being gay has nothing to do with why you're facing judgment.
Right.
In reality, there's 100,000 other reasons that you've made in your life to face God on judgment day where right. you're going to be guilty.
Right. But for the last 100 years or more, the church has said, I mean, this has been a topic of conversation Lizzie and I had the other day. You and I think we're talking about it earlier. Like, the church has done such a poor job with this idea of sex that it has mm-hmm. become the worst possible sin that you could possibly yeah. have is sex in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even just the homosexual stuff, like just any of it. Mm-hmm. And we don't, the church hasn't talked about the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. They haven't talked about the beauty of it. You know, the fact that it draws a married husband and wife together, and we haven't
and
talked about
life.
The creation of life, right. and we haven't spoken into the why it even exists, you know, and the beauty therein, and instead we just say it's bad, don't do it
yeah.
until you're married, and then when somebody does screw up, it's like, oh, you are forever tarnished. And it's like, well, hold on. Hold on that a second. Has been, you've lied before.
That has
are you
been,
forever tarnished?
That I mean, has been the way that it's been dealt with. I agree with you.
Right.
Because I remember that going through church as a kid. Like, that was how it was talked about. That's how it was dealt with. It was like this horrible, like, and you know.
Oh, and by the way, wait till you're married.
If the
church, is so bad, you can only do it when you're married.
If the church found out that two teenagers had done something, you know, and you know, it was like the women came out wailing.
You know,
and,
like,
you know, it
that's,
was
Nick. That's a good point. Like, what you said it in jest, but that
it's true.
It not
I did
only
say
that,
it in jest, but I mean it.
Not only that, but like, it explains so much why there's so much divorce today,
mm-hmm.
right? We've got such a negative outlook on marriage,
mm-hmm.
that it's like,
well,
I mean, because here's the reality for anybody. This, you know. Trigger warning, maybe not kid friendly, whatever. You know what?
If you've listened to any of this, you know none of this is right. kid friendly.
So whatever. You know, teach their own, judge.
Maybe we should record a warning after we're done, just to put at the beginning of the video.
I think he'll do it. Anyways, Mark will figure something out.
All right, this is the warning. You can move it up there, Mark.
But here's the thing. Like...
Now I can't be serious.
Yeah, right. Now I can't even think about it seriously. But, like, here's the truth. Once you get married, it's not sex all the time. Like, it's not...
Nope.
It's not the Garden of Eden all of a sudden once you get married. Like,
not everybody's like, running around naked.
We don't talk about that. You know, like... And if you're like, well, that's not true. You've only been married for, like, a week. So, like, I mean, just wait. It goes away, right? Like, so... Like, Here's the honest truth. Like, that's not how things are, right? Like,
it's a lot messier than that.
It's way messier than that. And, you know, like, life is not also all about that either. Like, you find that intimacy is even more than just romantic and sexual intimacy. But here's the truth. Like, you're neither party, no matter how much you want to say it, 99 times out of 100 is going to want to have sex every night. Mm-hmm. It's just not a thing. Although the church pushes this whole, like, you know, wait till you're married and then, you know, that's where
it's
sex is had. And then you think, well, I mean, Lizzie and I were virgins whenever we got married. And it's one of those things where you come in and you're like, all right, I have held off for 25 years. Right?
Let's do
it's
this
gonna
thing.
Be, it's going to be an every night thing. Yeah. And that's just not realistic. And we as a church fail to say that, right? Like, and it's okay that that's not the case, right? You learn that, you know, it's something that is enjoyable, but it's not all consuming. It's not the basis of your relationship,
yeah.
Right? And so that's really the truth of the matter there that we fail to say as the church.
It really has had a lack of respect, like true yeah. respect, right? Put on it, like in that, you know, because it's. I'm sorry to anyone in this age group. I don't use this term to insult you, but like that boomer generation, right? The baby boomers. A lot of that generation, it was always very taboo to speak about. Mm. Like, it was very hush-hush. Like, we don't talk about these
just
things.
Just like mental health.
yeah, just like mental health. And, you know, but when you treat it in that way, you treat it as taboo, then everybody, the younger generation coming up is going to learn that, oh, well, we just don't talk about those things. Mm-hmm. So we do all those things in secret because I know what they're doing in private. And they do talk about these things in private when I'm not around. So it's okay to do there. But, it's all learned behavior. And when the church treats it that way, now the right. church is justifying that mm-hmm. behavior. And it's just it's setting an example. And that's really what has happened is the traditional church has set that example. You know, and when I say the traditional church, I mean, you know, the big box major numbers, you know, I'm not talking about smaller
smaller churches too,
even some
like
community
let's not let anybody off the hook,
sure.
right? Like
we
everybody
could,
can
do a far better
everybody
job
in this
of
room
talking
who
about
went
sex.
To any church growing yeah. up more than likely, I mean, there are some exceptions on people, but more than likely that was how the church spoke yeah. about it mm-hmm. as a whole from the from the pulpit at the time. You know what I mean? Like, we don't even like, call that half that the half the time anymore.
Yeah. Well,
so like, but that's
if the schools are teaching sex education, why isn't the church? You know, like who do you want them to hear it from? Like, because they're going to give, and you know what kind of stuff we're dealing with in the schools right now, right? You got to worry about whether or not they're going to have, like, you know, a man dressed up in a dress reading stories to your kindergartners, you know, like, you think they're going to tell them?
Yeah,
the
just
right
wait.
Stuff
just
about,
wait till those kindergartners are in sex ed, right?
Yeah.
Like actually in that class.
Yeah, and what do you think they're going to be learning then?
7 years from now is when that'll start happening. Like,
not, I mean, here's even. What I find
not even at this point
really interesting is you made the statement, and it's true. You said sex is not the basis of a relationship, nor should it be.
I think Lizzie said that.
Okay, I'll give that to Lizzie. You said that, and nor should it be. And you're right, because if it is, it's an idol, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Christ has to be the basis of your relationship. Right. Mm-hmm. But the amazing thing is that in our culture right now, sex is the basis of everything. It really is. Of who you are, it all comes down to your sex, unless you're a straight white male, right? In which case, then you don't count.
Well, no, then it absolutely identifies.
Oh, that's true.
Right, because then now you're belligerent, the most evil,
hated
person on the planet, right?
So I just find that so incredibly interesting. Like, the Bible speaks of it. And the crazy thing is like, you can't get through a book of the Bible without some form of... If you have a naive child sitting in your midst being like, what does that mean? Right? We're in chapter 7 of Joshua right now, and we've talked about prostitutes, and we've talked about circumcision. So like, yeah. Hey, there's some great bedtime reading for you.
We got to have some conversations. Like,
well, right.
And like, me and Derek have had this discussion before, but like, my dad has always been a leader in the church and always has preached and teached and stuff like that. And
this
he
is
never,
the exception I was talking about.
Yeah, this is the exception. Like,
I knew she'd break it
I
up.
Was raised knowing these stories and knowing what that meant. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
So it wasn't like this, oh my gosh, thing. Like,
it wasn't a taboo.
The sin portion.
It wasn't a taboo. But
that's
like,
that's the thing. Like, the sin portion of it, like,
it wasn't shied away from, I guess. And I guess the way that I was raised is the exception.
I don't know, because
like,
sin portion of it is, I don't believe that's shied away from, right? Like, like we condemn it all the time. We talk about
like,
how the prostitutes are this and that
and
the negatives on that, all that stuff all the time. And I'm not saying that prostitution is a good thing, but I'm saying like the tie-in is sex, right? Like that is what that tie-in is.
But so, I mean, if it wasn't for that, they would be making no money, so.
They wouldn't be a prostitute, though. I mean,
right.
Selling your body for nothing doesn't make any sense.
And, like, the fact that, like, okay, all these women in the Bible, my dad, his favorite sermon series or sermon to do is Bad Women of the Bible.
Bad Women.
Yeah. Derek's seen him preach it, like, 2 or 3 times. I've seen it probably 10 or 15 times. But
same
he goes through Jesus' lineage and, like, points out all the sexual sin that happens there. Like, you think your family's messed up. Look at Jesus' lineage. Like, but, like... That was never, like, hidden from me as a child. Like,
and I'm
that
not
was never,
saying that that stuff's hidden.
Like,
I'm saying
but
the
just
good
like,
stuff is hidden.
But just, like, okay, but there is redemption in this. Like, through, you know, Rahab, you know, obviously she gave up prostitution, but she decided to follow God. Like, with Tamar, like, she slept with her father-in-law. You know, how awkward is that?
But then she was called the righteous one.
Yeah. And, you know, all this stuff. And there is redemption in that. Like, and that was, I guess, stressed more for me than, like, there is, like, if you have done these things, there is redemption. Like, there is more to your story. So, this is not the end of your story. This is just, okay, where do you go from here? Where is God leading to you from here, past here?
A similar example is, like, if we take... lying, right? Because that lying is like that is the least of the sins in some people's eyes, right? It's the least of them in some people's eyes, though.
It's
like,
first
oh, it's just a little white lie, right? It's just something
yeah,
small.
It's
I mean,
what justifies
to,
all your other sins.
Right. It's easy to get rid of, right? Like,
it's that one toe over the line that gets the whole body over.
Right. But here's the thing. Here's the reality of it. If we want to talk about sin and what it does, like the very first time you lie, well, It's the same as the first time you have sex, right? You can't get that back. Your integrity is forever tarnished. Mm-hmm. Period. Now, does one lie make you a liar? No. It means you've lied and you've sinned, right? Well, no. No, no, listen. Listen. It does not make you a liar because sure calling does. Someone a liar, no, it doesn't. Because calling someone a liar means that that is their lifestyle. That's why I get so hung up on the hypocrite thing, right? Calling me a hypocrite because I've on occasion done something outside of what I have taught is not the definition of what a hypocrite is. A hypocrite is someone who lives there, right? They mm-hmm. they are constantly doing things outside of what they are teaching. So if you've lied before, sure, you've lied. Like,
and you but if you lie,
if you are a liar, it is someone who is that is a part of their life. They live there.
But you're gonna. It doesn't matter if you're. That's like saying I used to lie. So, but I'm okay now. I don't do it anymore. Well, you still lied. Like you still are
right. But that doesn't make you a liar. Still,
sure. When you go, if I go and I you know assault someone and they die, right? I've now committed murder.
Right.
Okay. And I did that when I was 18. But it's 2023 now. It's been 20 years. Okay. I'm not a murderer anymore. Well, no.
That's true.
I am still a murderer.
No, you have
murdered. I murdered someone. You are a murderer.
With that ideology, like, with that ideology, there's no redemption.
No, there is.
No, there's not. There's no redemption from there, because you are always that.
No.
Even
no,
in heaven, you are that.
No.
Yes. At that rate, that makes you that forever.
But you can't. You cannot be redeemed until you acknowledge sure. that you need redemption. And so okay. I know that I have fallen short, which is why I need redemption. And now I can appreciate that redemption because I know I've fallen short and I'm not deserving of it. That by every account, I was guilty as charged. I was a lie. I would have stood in court as a liar, a thief, a slanderer, a blasphemer, an adulterer, a murderer. What other and any other you know one that I've committed them all. I've broken every law. I'm guilty. But because of him, I can say that I'm not guilty because I'm washed in the blood. But without it, we have to look at it and say, if you've lied, you're going to stand in court and you're going to be called a liar by justly.
I don't think you can put the label on
it. I don't have to. I'm not putting a label.
You are saying the label is placed.
When you stand before God,
you're not there yet.
But
you don't know.
You're talking
as though you're there.
But until you're redeemed, that's the reality of the situation you're looking towards. So we have to acknowledge that reality, and we can't get away from it.
I'll agree to disagree so we can move on. I would say
there's a little bit of truth in both of those things. It's just kind of like it's like the AA approach. You've never
beaten your addiction.
Beaten addiction, right? You're always a recovering alcoholic. Mm-hmm.
But why do we do that, right? It's so that you don't
regret.
Hope. You don't think, oh,
hope.
I will go right back in. I don't need this anymore, right?
We're recovering help. Liars, and we're recovering murderers, and we're recovering prostitutes.
Exactly.
If you want to think of it that way, that's fine. I, at that rate, then we're all just trash always. So I don't want to devolve into that.
No, because
that conversation.
Because
like,
it no. Because I was just trying to make you're the, discarding like the beauty of the what the Holy Spirit does when
I'm
you
not,
skip over it.
I'm because, not discarding
but,
it.
But
all right, let's throw this monkey wrench in all this, right? Because God, throughout Scripture, you find people being called righteous. They're clearly not right.
Yeah,
David is called righteous. Not right.
Righteous Moses, before God.
Moses was called yeah. righteous. Not
right.
Right. Elijah. Dude, he didn't even die. Right. All these people called righteous. So even when you think about Sodom and Gomorrah, says if there are 10 righteous, and apparently among those people was Lot and his family because they were spared. So. Were they considered righteous? what we know, though,
not
is,
if you read later,
right? What we know in all of that, though, shot, is that though. There is nobody righteous. Chance. Right? Paul makes that very clear. And just because Paul said it in the first century AD does not mean it wasn't relevant to the 21st century BC. Like, we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So there has got to be a place where righteousness collides with our sinful behavior. And that place is the cross, right? Mm-hmm. Inevitably. And then there is that process. And this is where sanctification is going to come in, because we are going through the process of sanctification, right. and we don't reach the pinnacle of it until we meet Christ.
Can you define that better? Because I'm smart not here to ask you that question.
Sanctification is in a nutshell, it's being made right. It's being made righteous, and it's God taking away all, I like to say, all of the rough edges that we have, and cleansing us from all of the junk that we carry around all the time. So you are both correctish in your presentations of, are we all dirty, rotten sinners all the time? Yes.
I didn't say that.
Are we the product of our sin? Yes. But are we also, is there redemption when we come to Christ? Yes. So sanctification is the tool in which we go from, I am a murderer, to I'm not a murderer anymore. I'm right. Cleansed by the blood of Christ. Are you happy now? No, I know you're not, because you're giving me the face.
So the point I was making.
The point I was making
was that we look at sex as this thing that is like, oh my gosh, I can't get it back, right? Like the virginity's gone, you know, after this first time, and it's true, right? But that is still a sin that was committed, that just like a lie means that your perfect integrity is gone, right? Like, it doesn't mean that you are this horrible human being all of a sudden, and that you are not beautiful, or that you are not whatever. Like, those two things are on equal levels. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, the fact that they are sin, right? So
you're only your sin if you desire to live in it.
Right.
If you desire to give it to Jesus, you're not your sin anymore.
Right.
Because that would completely downplay who he is and what he's done. So you come to Christ, you are no longer your sin. You've been released from that. Doesn't mean you won't sin.
Right. Because Paul talks about this, right? In I can't remember which book, but he talks about how he continues to sin, and how
so he continues to do what he doesn't want to do.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's better.
Could be a lot of different things.
He's not saying he actively sins. He's saying he makes mistakes.
Right.
Right. That he doesn't want to screw up, but he does. Like, he makes the wrong call, or he does the wrong thing. He chooses, you know, he uses the wrong words at the wrong time, and or he says something that in the moment it he doesn't see how it, you know, it hits the flesh and not the spirit, right? So, because our words are so important. Mm-hmm. But but ultimately, at the end of the day, when he boils it down, and I kind of just read through this, is when he sins, it's sin still living in his flesh, mm-hmm. that God is in the process of sanctifying from him, mm-hmm. right? And so when he recognizes these things, he can then go against them and start working in God's will to help defeat them. Mm-hmm. And the good that he does doesn't even come from him. Mm-hmm. It's all the Holy Spirit that lives in him. Mm-hmm. So Paul, still filthy rags, but with the Holy Spirit, he can do the work of God, mm-hmm. and he can do good. And that, I need him. That we recognize that you need him every day, and without him, everything you do is filthy rags. It doesn't matter if it's good. Your donations are filthy rags before God if they're not in the Spirit of Christ. Mm-hmm. They're nothing. Mm-hmm. They're useless. You're not going to look righteous on Judgment Day with that. And that's kind of what I mean when I say, you know, we have, that's the beauty that we can live in, is that I don't deserve it today. Just because I walked in the Lord for X number of days, you know, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. I got to keep doing it today because I don't deserve what I've been given. So I got to walk it out. Because
let's make a move back to where this whole thing started, which was the discussion on, you know, all these mainline denominational churches that are failing, and then how a lot of the more independent churches are not. So in that, it showed that there is one that grew substantially.
I think it was one of the Pentecostals, right? Like it might or have Presbyterians?
Been. No. Mm-mm.
Or Pentecostals?
No. It wasn't labeled that. Oh, Assembly of God, which is charismatic. So Assembly of God is growing pretty rapidly. There were two or three other denominations. They did mention the Southern Baptist Convention, that they had a scandal attached to them, which, hey, that's just as bad as anything else, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they lost, but their loss was not nearly as substantial as...
They've also been introducing things like CRT and, you know...
In some cases.
There's a lot of issues happening within the SBC itself, and that's an internal struggle within their own organizational structure.
The whole point of what they got to, though, was that conservative teaching... conservative renderings of scripture that's being presented that way, they're the churches that are growing. It's not churches that are, you know, trying to feel their way into some gospel that doesn't exist. And there is something profound in that, because God is going to prune the things that are dead or dying, the things that aren't attached to that good root, and he's going to nourish the things that are attached well to that good root and are starting to produce or are producing fruit. We don't do anything outlandish here. Like we do worship pretty well. Like, our music is pretty good. Like if you like contemporary music, our preaching is okay, but I preach the Bible. Like, that's the most important thing. I'm going to offer illustrations and examples of what we find in our culture and how it all collides and try to make it relevant. I rely on God to do all that. But I'm not going to preach anything that's not in the Bible. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
If you did, your attendance would drop. I guarantee it.
Yeah. And our attendance has grown.
Well, it might go up by 30%. Won't include a specific group.
Right,
of
our
people.
Attendance has grown by 30% from through 2021 to 2022, and we're on that same trend, that same pace for this year. Even though we're only a month into it at this point, so a lot of it comes down to it's a simple formula, right? When it really comes down to it, is you just can't abandon. You can't abandon the bedrock.
That's right.
The foundation, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the stuff that the Bible teaches us. We aren't crossing out any verses we don't like. Yeah. We're confronting them. Because, man, I was really tempted to not want to talk about last week how as soon as those walls fell down, every living thing inside those walls was destroyed. That's a really tough one to be like, where's this
like
coming from?
Like the babies. Like...
Were there, yeah. like, we yeah. don't know. Yeah. It was a military outpost.
Yeah.
Did God kill babies?
If God
loves that baby more than we do, right?
Yeah, exactly. If he did, he loves that child more than anyone else. So we don't have to worry about what he's going to do with them, because he loves them and he's going to take care of it. Mm-hmm. In the way that is just and right and perfect and holy.
Right.
And so, and I think there is something, obviously, that people struggle with that.
Right.
Because we view death as bad, but...
God just sees it as a transition.
It's a point
of transition.
It's his... The mysteries or the wages that we're receiving, and we don't know what God had intended for those, for you know, for the floods the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there were children in the world in the flood. We don't know what happened to those children. That's between God and God.
He's the only one that can make that judgment.
Like,
he's the only one that has authority to make that judgment. We do not. We don't. We don't get to determine who lives and dies.
Yeah. Not today.
Wow. We have spanned the globe, I feel like, in this episode, going from talks about
The Chosen
and Titanic to the Titanic transfer of influence that's happening in our culture right now, from mainline denominational churches to more independent churches. Man, we touched on a whole lot of things that are influencers when it comes to how churches are showing and revealing the gospel and teaching the gospel in the confines of their setting, worship setting, whatever that might look like. And really at the root of all of this is the fact that there is one truth, and inherently inside of all of us is a yearning for that truth. And as soon as that starts to get abandoned, we are going to seek out, maybe even unknowingly, we are going to seek out the place that is going to sow those seeds of truth back into our lives. And I pray that we're a place, podcast, church-wise, that we're always one of those places that will sow that seed of truth that is also fertilized with grace. Because that's the place God desires for us to live in, is to toe that really challenging line between truth and grace. If you're listening to this, and maybe you got fired up at different parts of this podcast, we want to hear from you. Like, we want to hear your thoughts. We want to hear what you think we got wrong. And we want to be able to talk through some of those things as well. So you can hit us up at thetruthresponse@gmail.com, and we'll talk through whatever you might have there for us. And hey, I hope you enjoyed this time that we spent together. I know I sure did. And we will talk to you again soon. God bless. Hey, thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and give us a like on iTunes and Spotify so that you will never miss a show. And while you're at it, check out our Facebook and Instagram pages, and make sure you tell your friends about this show. You don't want them to miss out on the truth, because we are all about the truth here. Thanks for joining us this week, and God bless.